This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and warning, you may have an awkward conversation today after listening to this program. Because one of the hardest conversations you can have with a young person begins with these words. Hey, can we talk about what online pornography you have seen?
Mark from Dallas, our little one is starting junior high. We've told her the websites do exist. So the things she hears are wildly exaggerated, but they are partly true. They are not realistic representations of loving, respectful, social relationships. She can ask us anything she wants to, and she's got plenty of time to learn about it on her own after she moves out of my house.
Mark from Dallas had that conversation, and that conversation is going on right now at thetakeaway.org, Orlando, Florida. Viewing pornography can be an addiction, so you must teach your children that, and if you've raised your children the right way, they will choose not to. Garland, Texas. A hard conversation got easier after the first virus was downloaded to his computer. My side went like this. Pornography takes something beautiful and makes it profane. Your interest in the human body is natural and good. Learning through pornography is not the way I would like for you to learn.
Hi, I'm Nathaniel Wheeler from Hickory, North Carolina, and I just think it's important not to humiliate your children regardless of what their interests are.
Tacoma, Washington. Told my then 14-year-old son, who had been caught viewing porn in the middle of the night, that I'd personally chop the PC into little itty-bitty pieces if I ever caught him doing it again. I then followed up by checking his viewing history. Oklahoma City. With my children, I plan to discuss porn as addictive and only temporarily satisfying. I also plan to limit their access to media for a myriad of reasons, including the pervasive culture of pornography.
Hi, I'm Amber Phillippe from Omaha, Nebraska. My husband and I just explained that most of the women in the pictures and videos are being exploited and taken advantage of, and that we hope that our children won't be a part of exploiting them further, and that there is a reason that you must be 18 to buy or see pornography, so just wait until you're an adult and wiser so you can make an actual educated decision on whether your own sexual gratification is more important than not being a part of the problem that is fueling the need to continue to exploit these poor girls. Hopefully they listen.
And here's two more. Brighton, Missouri. I tell my daughter that it may shape a boy's expectation of her and that she doesn't have to live up to that. Nobody can live up to that. Or Glasgow, Kentucky. My parents didn't talk to me about it, and I don't know if I'd talk to mine about it. Out of sight, out of mind. Question mark. Thanks for all those honest reflections on a difficult subject, but when statistics show that 4 out of 5 16-year-olds regularly view porn online, this subject is neither out of sight nor out of mind. And now we're going to raise the ante. In a moment, you will hear from a 19-year-old who, barely out of high school, answered an ad to be a hot girl in an adult movie. She got a free plane ticket in the mail, left home, and spent a terrifying year in the seamy world of amateur porn. But this young woman talks openly about her experience. In fact, you might not want to hear this level of candor. Fair warning, no bad words, but her story is hard to listen to at times. Rachel is her name, and she's one of the young women profiled in a new Netflix documentary, Hot Girls Wanted, which makes its debut on May 29th. We'll hear from the extraordinary filmmakers later this hour. But first, Rachel tells a story of survival in a world that's a click away on your computer. A world of meaningless sex, cheap celebrity, and glitter for people who believe they have no options.
I'm 19 now, but when I started, I was 18.
And how hard is this work?
The physical work, I would say extremely hard, because that's just not humanly, really, to be having sex like that, or that often, or that vigorously, or with that many different people. Like, it's just not supposed, like, we weren't brought here on this earth really to do that. It takes a toll on your body hard.
And how do you deal with that?
It sucks. Like, you can't do anything. Like, there's no room for a normal relationship because you can't even have sex after you get off of a set. You're messed up. You have to go to the doctor every 2 weeks to figure out what's wrong with you, to get some type of antibiotic, some medication to, like, get you back on track. And then it's messed up instantly right after that. So that was the worst part for me, like, not being able to be healthy, because you were never healthy.
What would you describe, thinking back, as the moment, the exact moment when you crossed the line that you couldn't go back over?
When I probably started feeling, like, comfortable. Like when I was like, oh, this is cool. Like this is my job. I go to work every day, take my clothes off. They take pictures of me, whatever. I do all this stuff. And it's normal. I talk about it to people like it's normal. People call me by Ava, and that's not even my name. It's normal. Like, I was confused.
And as far as parents, family in Oswego goes, when was the first time you went back and had some sort of, well, here's the news?
Yeah, it was more like I never wanted them to find out. But once I came back from Miami the first time, I was talking to one of my friends about it, and I hadn't told anyone that I was doing that before that, but I thought it was normal, so I can go back home and talk about it like it's normal. But the people back at home didn't see it as normal because they went to high school with me. You know, they saw me at prom. They saw me walking down the hallways. They never expected it. So it just blew up. The news just traveled through the high schools. And then someone had sent a picture to my parents. And then that's how my parents found out. And then my brothers and sisters had, you know, the shockwaves go through them. And then people in school would, you know, go to them about it, like, oh, I hear your sister's doing this and that. And then when I started hearing that, I was like, man, like, do I really want that image? Like, do I want that to be me? Like, I'm their sister. I'm supposed to be, you know, a role model to them. Like, I'm one of their oldest sisters. So is that really the best I could be doing? So then once I got those thoughts in my head, it was like there was no going back. There was no, like, going back to the life, like the glamour of porn. Like it was all taken away at that point. Like there was nothing good about it anymore.
So you really learned something about the importance of your family.
Yeah, I almost never even knew it before this. Like, because my brothers and sisters, they were on my side. They never were like, you're such a horrible sister, blah, blah, blah. Like they were always on my side. So the fact that they could be there for me, like through all of that seriousness, like, I was like, I owe them something to be better than that. Like, they're part of me, so I had to show them that I could be way more than that.
And, you know, a lot of the other girls in the movie who you encountered certainly don't have that support network back in Oswego like you have.
Right, and I was lucky for that. I really think that's what set me apart, was that I didn't come there with issues. I have 5 brothers and sisters. My parents are married. I have, like, the best friends in the world. But I was, like, craving adventure. I was craving travel. I was craving a different culture, like, something that will, like, nourish me instead of malnourish me like Oswego was doing. Like, I'm not, like, some crazy sexual psychotic person where I needed to go out and be a porn star and blah, blah, blah. Like, I had something to live for, but I went into an industry where they don't care if you have something to live for. They you're just a body. I wasn't just a body. I have a soul. I have a mind. I have, like, so much to offer. So I just knew that that industry was limiting me.
Relationships. Do you have any thoughts about what that's going to be like as you grow up?
Yeah, that's a tough subject because, like, I know what I want. I know what I want, and it sucks that I know the person that I could find it in. But in the situation that I'm in now, it can't happen because of stupid drama and all this stuff. But I have this, like, picture in my head of, like, what can be perfect, and it's always going to be there. But I know that this waiting and this time and all the stuff that I have to do in between this point and that point, it's going to make it that much sweeter in the end. So I'm not rushing into anything like, oh, I need to be in a relationship or I need to find this person now. I just know that the waiting will be worth it because I'll be in a better place and that person will be in a better place. So it's just like, it's just, I'm letting life happen now.
Are you saying that you're broken inside right now and that if you wait for a while, it'll fix?
I wouldn't technically say broken, maybe a little dented, but yeah, It's just like I know who I can be and what I can be and how much I can really do with myself. So I'm not going to settle for someone who doesn't see that, because I want someone to know me. And someone right now, they'll know what I did, or they'll know who I was, or whatever. So they'll make a subjective opinion jumbled up of stuff that I don't technically want them to put on me just because I did it. Yeah, that it was me, but it's not technically me. So once I'm off doing what I really love to do and someone notices that, then I think that's like a way better time for me to be looking for someone. So right now I'm just like, it's like blinders. Like, I don't need you. So I need myself.
And you're only 19. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about that way more that's coming down the line.
I mean, I think of myself as smart. I have a brain. So the fact that I was in an industry where they think that I don't irked me. Like, I was like, let me just show you what I can do. So once I picked up my camera, I was like, this is what I can do, because I can be creative. I can show the world to people who can't technically go out and see it. And I can really, you know, make something of this. Like, I can make a career out of this, a career that I can be proud of, my family can be proud of, but it takes time. Like, there's a reason our life is so long, because it's all steps towards whatever. You just have to live. Like, living is really the only thing I can do. So I can't force it. So I'm just going to let it be.
That story from 19-year-old Rachel, who joined the porn industry on a lark and then got out, is just one story from the new Netflix documentary, Hot Girls Wanted. The film takes cameras into a world of changing sexuality, of people with limited options who are willing to run away from home to become porn stars, as kids once dreamed of running away to join the circus. The film is produced by the incredibly talented actress and artist Rashida Jones, who grew up in the entertainment world as a child of music producer Quincy Jones and actress Peggy Lipton. But it is the amazing access obtained by directors Jill Bauer and Ronna Gratis that make this film part cautionary tale and part young women coming-of-age story. In Hot Girls Wanted, we see a universal theme play out in a barbaric setting.
They just graduated high school. This was a free ticket out of their small towns. It was quick money. They don't have a lot of opportunities. They're not on the college track. They're generally, if they would go to college, they'd be first generation, you know, kids who would go to college. So this was just opportunity and freedom.
One of the girls in the film, in an extraordinarily affecting moment, says, "I'm going to own this. I'm going to own it. I'm doing everything. I'm owning it." And she's expressing a power that comes directly out of some strange notion of feminism, and it's all kind of mixed together. And that's where the lightning kind of goes right down my spine, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I watching here? Did you feel that?
Absolutely. I mean, they go back to the house, and there it's a little bit of a sorority, and they boost each other up.
Is this, have you ever been to a
baby?
No. Oh my God, you have fun.
You know, they've just done something that in many cases is tough to take. It's harsh. It's very hard work. They work very hard, you know, when they shoot these scenes. And then they go back and they're very supportive, and they say, "I feel empowered." And so they kind of, there's this mantra, this kind of speak. And look, there are certainly women who are making porn who it is empowering them and it works for them. And, you know, sex is a very nuanced topic, and so is pornography. And so, you know, we're not here as anti-pornography people, you know, saying this is bad. We captured one particular part of the industry, professional amateur porn. And, you know, this is what we saw. We saw the girl sort of talking this talk, and then it would sort of devolve, generally speaking.
The guy, why did he let you film him?
Riley, the agent.
Yeah.
When we met him, he had been in business for, I think, just 2 or 3 months. So he was brand new to the world of professional amateur porn. And he actually is quite similar to a lot of the girls. He comes from sort of the same socioeconomic background. And I think he, like them, feels very, you know, in control of his life. He's found this way to make money and to be independent and to live in a 5-bedroom house. And I think a lot of it was just pride.
Pretty much in a year, I went from a dishwasher loser working at Outback to living in Miami Beach in a 5-bedroom house with my own car. I just drive my girls to and from shoots. They pay rent. And I make good money.
Who had the guts to ask that guy, what is the shelf life of the women?
It was not a scary question at all. Everyone we met was so open about their choice to work in this profession.
Were you surprised when he said a year tops?
We had been learning that at that point, so that was really just confirmation, and it was really helpful to get that confirmation from a man working in the industry because they have staying power, so they really watch the cycle of the girls, you know, happen every day.
There's a girl in the film, a blonde. She's from Washington State, I believe.
Yeah.
And she says something.
Carly.
Carly, yes. I may get this quote wrong, but she says something like, I never have sex except in porn.
Well, that actually wasn't that surprising because several girls that we met had only had one or two sexual partners before getting into pornography. And yeah, hookup culture, just sex is no big deal. And it seems like a lot of girls and boys are not really getting what they want, and they can get hurt very easily, and they feel like it's not okay to express that you want something more than a hookup. So a lot of these girls, in a very ironic way, sort of felt like porn was a safe place to have sex.
An upgrade,
because number one, you're getting paid. And then number two, they said, there's no pretense. I know I'm going to have sex with this guy, and it's a job, and he's not going to lie to me, and he's not going to pretend that he likes me. So everything is just totally straightforward, and you're less likely to get emotionally hurt.
There's a point at which you watch the film, and you go, oh, this is an outrage. This is exploitation. This is horrible. This is awful. But then you see these girls being girly, and they've got this kind of support group that's bizarre. And but, you know, maybe this is the way the world is right now. I couldn't resolve those. Rashida, do you understand what I'm talking about?
I do. I mean, I think that's part of the power of the film is that, you know, I think there's an expectation that the girls who decide to go into porn are broken and they're from broken homes and they're going to fill some hole in their heart and they're not going to be able to do it. But the truth is, these girls are normal and they are like us and they do have supportive families and supportive boyfriends and they feel like this is a good choice, and in part because of the backdrop, the cultural backdrop, and in part because, you know, it's so easy to do. And there is sort of like this disconnection from how you're feeling about being sexy and having sex and actually having sex for a living, because they're very, very different things. But I think that's the point of the film, is that there's a normalcy about this that in itself should be looked at.
So, I mean, it seems to me that what the industry you're portraying here is protected by the U.S. Constitution.
Absolutely.
I get the sense there's no fix here. This is the way the world is.
I mean, the only federal regulation is that a girl has to be 18, and that is it. And I don't know about a fix, but I think there definitely needs to be a conversation about catching up with the internet and addressing the fact that the industry has changed so much because of it, so that, you know, new sort of safety measures need to be put into place.
Jill Bauer and Ronna Gratis are the directors of Hot Girls Wanted, which debuts on Netflix tomorrow. The film is produced by Rashida Jones. To hear an extended interview with them and to hear more from 19-year-old Rachel, one of the women documented in the film, subscribe to our podcast, which you can find on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll automatically get the longer versions this Saturday on the latest edition of the Takeaway Weekender.